From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Welcome to another in our series of Rudman Center Conversations with the Candidates, coming to you from the Rudman Center at UNH School of Law. Our guest tonight is New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan, a Democrat seeking a second term. I'd like to thank her and our sponsors of this series, Eastern Bank and Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center. Throughout the series, I'll be encouraging candidates to discuss what they would do rather than attack their opponents, and we'll take questions from our audience here at the Rudman Center. And Governor Hassan, welcome. Thanks for taking time out.
Thanks so much for having me.
So what keeps the governor up at night in terms of New Hampshire and its future?
Well, first of all, I want to take the opportunity to thank the folks here at the Rudman Center for hosting this. The Rudman Center does a great job of honoring the memory of Warren Rudman, who I think exemplified the New Hampshire tradition of bipartisanship and fiscal responsibility. So I can't think of a better way to honor him in participating tonight. So I'm very, very grateful. And I also just wanted to take an opportunity to wish all of those observing Rosh Hashanah a Happy New Year. Your question was, what do I think about as I think about where we've been in New Hampshire and where we're going?
Yeah, and what you're worrying about?
Well, what I've really worked to do since becoming governor was bringing people together in the New Hampshire tradition of bipartisanship and common sense problem solving. And we really worked to implement an innovation strategy so that we can keep our economy moving in the right direction. It's about expanding middle-class opportunity. It's about helping innovative businesses create really great jobs. And so we've done a lot in the last couple of years to get us going in the right direction again, particularly focusing on things like freezing tuition at our colleges so that we can make sure that young people stay here and can have the kind of opportunity to be prepared for 21st century jobs. We've made sure that we've balanced our budget in a bipartisan budget without a sales or income tax. We've done that, again, by bringing people together, listening to each other's concerns. We've taken great steps forward in terms of reaching bipartisan consensus around a number of issues like transportation infrastructure and like Medicaid expansion so that 50,000 Granite Staters, many of whom didn't have access to health care before, have access to that. So what we want to keep doing over the next 2 years is continue keeping the economy moving in the right direction. We have the lowest unemployment rate we've had since 2008. The private sector has created about 10,000 jobs in the last year. But we know a lot of people are still struggling and we have more work to do. So I'm going to be focused on continuing our innovation strategy. I'm going to be focused, again, on being fiscally responsible, bringing people together to make the tough choices to balance the budget without an income or sales tax. We're going to focus on workforce development. I hear from businesses all around the state that they need 21st century skilled workers. So not only making higher education affordable and accessible, but also modernizing our STEM education in our schools. And then making sure that we're building on the competition that we're seeing in our health insurance marketplace, making sure that we're working together to lower energy costs, and making sure that we continue every day to work on economic development with an initiative, among other things, an initiative called Live Free and Start, which is really examining how we can be even more receptive and more modern for entrepreneurs and startups.
Well, let's talk about a couple of those. Definitely energy costs, definitely economic growth. A little bit later, maybe freezing tuition. For many years, Governor Hassan, as you know, New Hampshire led New England in economic growth. Low taxes, high quality of life. We attracted a lot of really smart, talented people to help make our economy the envy of this region. And now I'm hearing a lot of angst that our glory days may be behind us, that we're not what we used to be, and that our demographic challenges are going to drag our economy down. What do you think? Is it time for us to settle for being middle of the pack? Or is there something new, new approach, new thinking that could put New Hampshire back in that leadership position that it enjoyed for so long?
Well, we certainly need to keep working on our innovation strategy. So what we know is that Our unemployment rate is the sixth lowest in the country. We know that we've seen the private sector create 10,000 jobs in the last year. We are among the highest of per capita GDP in New England. But we obviously have work to do. And so when you look at when I travel around the state having business roundtables, talking to manufacturers, talking to high-tech folks who are creating really great jobs, what they really encourage us to focus on, and I think it makes sense looking at the demographic trends that you're talking about, is how can we prepare our young people and how can we make it possible for them to stay here as they get educated and prepared for 21st century jobs. So when I came into office, the university system budget had been slashed by half. The community college system had been cut by about 30%. We restored most of that funding. We froze tuition at the university system, first time in 25 years. And this fall in New Hampshire's community colleges, students are seeing a tuition reduction of 5%. That helps our young people access the kind of higher education opportunities they need, and it helps keep them here so that they're not going to other states to start their higher education. But as important as higher education is, too, we know that we need to make sure that we're preparing our students in the K through 12 system for 21st century jobs, too. So that involves not only modernizing STEM education, and we have a STEM education task force with a variety of stakeholders on it, but it also means that you have to help young people figure out not only what they want to do in life, but what they're going to need to learn to be able to do that. They need to understand that you're going to need to study computer science as well as biology. So we're looking at not only what we should be requiring, but how our education system should be helping young people think about what they want to do, interact with businesses, have mentors, and really chart a course for themselves so that by the time they're through our K through 12 system, they have a good sense of whether they want to go to an apprenticeship. Maybe they want to go to community college first. Maybe they want to go on to higher education. But they really need to be thinking about that earlier on, and we need to be helping young people and their families understand what kind of potential there is right here in New Hampshire for really great jobs, among other things, in high tech and advanced manufacturing.
Well, let's talk about the quality of jobs, and then I also definitely want to talk about tuition. But first, the quality of jobs, Governor Hassan. You're right, New Hampshire has very low unemployment. Jobs have been created, but there's a concern that the quality of those jobs isn't great, that the growth has been in low-paying sectors like retail or hospitality, not those sort of great manufacturing, high-tech, stable jobs that have better pay and better benefits. And there's a number of studies that have looked at this. I wonder what you think. Are you satisfied with the quality of jobs that we have here?
Well, what I hear from businesses around the state is that they have really good paying jobs that they can't fill. Even jobs that pay about 25% of our median income in high tech and advanced manufacturing. So that's why the focus on preparing young people to be qualified for those jobs is really important. And as important as STEM is, we also need to be encouraging our young people and our school systems to be learning other skills, too. The arts come in handy to help people with creative thinking, an emphasis on cooperation and communication, because what our manufacturers are really looking for is people with strong STEM skills, but also those collaboration and communication and creative skills, too. And we have manufacturing companies with many, many of these jobs open. They're really having difficulty filling them. So we will see more people going into good-paying jobs if we can help prepare our young people. And that, of course, breeds interest in the state from businesses around the country who appreciate New Hampshire's really high quality of life, our wonderful work ethic here, our responsive and nimble small government. And so what we find is as we commit to employers, as we did when Albany Safran came to Rochester, they're in the midst of creating a whole new product, and they will need about 400 workers over time. I think they've hired somewhere over 100 recently. But we partnered them with our community college system, created a satellite campus of our community college system right near the Albany campus in Rochester. And that's a way when businesses see that we've done that, they know that if they come to New Hampshire and want to expand here or start here, we're going to be able to partner with them and really help them get the workforce they need.
And we keep talking about STEM, by the way. science, technology, engineering, and math. Those are the skills that businesses say they want. But I have heard more recently or seen in different business publications that STEM is not enough. They need the soft skills. They need the communication and so forth. I wonder, Governor Hassan, given all the emphasis that your administration, that the federal government, that everybody seems to be making on STEM, if we're going overboard on this thing.
Well, I think what we see is, as we talk with business leaders and as we look at data from around the country, that we know that the future of our economy really lies in being a diverse economy with advanced manufacturing and high-tech manufacturing, which is coming back. And, you know, one of the other things I hear from manufacturers is that they like being here in New Hampshire and they want to stay here in New Hampshire because not only do we have workers with a great work ethic and not only do we have an education system that is responding to their needs, but that the quality of workforce and the quality of product that they can manufacture is really great. So I think it is hard to overemphasize the importance of STEM, but also the importance of all the other skills. We're really talking about building a workforce of very competent, creative, cooperative people who understand that they can make a real difference and have a great job and a great career right here in New Hampshire.
Is the education system, though, Governor Hassan, responding to young people's needs, as you said? I mean, high tuition at UNH, high debt for our college students. New Hampshire often comes out on top in terms of the debt load that that young people bear. Sometimes our kids go away to college and they don't come back. There's less incentive for them to go to the state school because the state school is so expensive. So are we doing right by them?
Well, that's why we froze tuition at the university system, first tuition freeze in 25 years. It's why we worked really hard, and kudos to the community college system, when we got their budget back up to where it was before the cuts from the last legislature. They came together and figured out a way that they could reduce tuition. That is a priority of ours, and we are doing these things a step at a time, but I think we see, as young people see that frozen tuition, as they see community college go down, as they see the rest restoration of scholarship money that we put into our budget, they really do understand that it's a priority for us, and we're going to continue to make progress on that together.
Well, about the tuition freeze, last question. The UNH trustee said just recently that they'll freeze tuition again if they get more state money in the upcoming appropriation. This was a big priority for you when you ran 2 years ago. How big a push will you make, Governor Hassan, this time around for the university system to get even more money?
Well, what we do when we put together a budget is we bring people together. We talk about the various priorities that people bring to the budgeting process. We make difficult decisions together. We do it without an income or a sales tax. But I am confident that as we do that and as we talk with the university system about their priorities, we're going to continue to find a way to not only have a terrific university system, but to really focus on affordability for our young people and really continue to focus on how important access at all levels of education is to expand middle-class opportunity.
So not sure yet what you're going to do in that budget.
Well, the budgeting process is an interactive process. This is New Hampshire, so we all come together. We do it from the grassroots up.
Sure,
and we talk about our priorities, and it's like any budgeting process.
I guess I'm wondering how much of a priority you are going to make that additional funding for the university system, given that it was a huge priority for you 2 years ago.
Well, it's certainly a priority, and there are other priorities that we all identify in the budgeting process. We come together, we air them, we make difficult decisions, we do it without an income or sales tax, and I'll continue to work on that. It's clearly a priority because if we can't have accessible and affordable higher education as well as high-quality K-12 education, we're not going to have the kind of workforce that attracts businesses here and keeps businesses here, and we're not going to be able to keep young people here. So it needs to be a priority, and it's a key element of economic development.
Speaking of education, here's a question that came in from our audience here at the Rudman Center about the K-12 system, Governor Hassan. What is the status of New Hampshire and the Smarter Balanced Assessment rollout? What do you think New Hampshire educators should do with the results of this assessment to improve student learning? And just to let folks know who aren't familiar with this, this is the standardized test that's associated with the new Common Core standards, which are really being put in place fully this school year. Thanks for the question.
Well, having a rigorous and complete and diverse education for our young people is really, really important if we're going to prepare them not only to be the workforce of the future, but to be the citizens of the future. And so probably as your listeners know, the states came together over a number of years and created the Common Core curriculum, and the Smarter Balanced Test is the standardized testing that is provided on a computer that adjusts to students' answers as they do it. So it's really a testing system that helps assess where a particular student is in their learning as opposed to just kind of a rigid yes or no set of answers. And so it is being rolled out this year. But for the first couple of years, the Smarter Balance Test won't be associated with any kind of stakes for either high stakes for teachers or students. I think one of the things we've heard from around the country is that it isn't the test itself, it's the way it's implemented that has been concerning. So we've made sure that as we roll it out in New Hampshire, and school systems throughout New Hampshire are putting together their plans to do that now, that the test will be taken and we will adjust to those tests and understand how they've worked for our students without there being high stakes for teachers or students.
So a couple years of adjustment.
Right.
Some governors, Indiana comes to mind and a few other states, have said, you know, never mind the Common Core. We agreed to it a few years ago, or at least our education officials did in the state, but we don't like this. What about you, Governor Hassan? Are you going to stand behind Common Core?
Common Core standards really are about teaching our students the way they need to be taught for 21st century learning, to delve deeper into subjects, to understand and be more analytic about what they're learning, to understand how they can drive their own education forward and how they can interact with material and really take responsibility for that material. And that's exactly the kind of prepared person that I hear we need from all of the businesses I talk to, and certainly we need to be citizens. So I think there will be adjustments with Common Core. I think, again, you know, you always are, whenever you try something new, transitions are difficult. But I think we all understand as a country and as a state that we need to be able to compete not only in the United States but globally. And I think when you see the reasons that Common Core was developed and that they were developed with a lot of input from the states, a lot of input from diverse stakeholders, I think it's a really important thing for us to move forward with. Understanding that there will be adjustments along the way, understanding that feedback is important, and understanding that mostly we want to provide a variety of educational experiences for our young people so that every person, no matter how they learn, has a chance to really excel and thrive.
One more question for you on the economy and, you know, the quality of jobs. You're saying it's going well, but it could be better. Republicans are saying that our tax structure is partly to blame for our slow growth. They're calling for lower business taxes. Do you think this would be an economic shot in the arm for the state?
Well, we've worked really hard, as you know, in New Hampshire to balance our budget without an income or sales tax. I'm very proud of the bipartisan budget that passed unanimously from our Republican Senate and just about unanimously from our Democratic House. And so we continue to work together to make sure that we're addressing the priorities of the people of New Hampshire. When Republicans or anyone else suggest cutting business taxes, the latest plan I heard was that a $90 million cut, if it's a cut to the business profits tax, which is what I think has been proposed, that goes mostly to very large corporations. They're often from out of state. They're often multinational corporations. And that would be a $90 million hole in our budget. And that $90 million has to be cut from somewhere. So I think it's really important that people think hard about what they wouldn't invest in this budget, a budget that had the most bipartisan support in over a decade, and in order to make up for a cut of about $90 million.
All right. Well, after a short break, we'll talk about some of the issues that you raised, Governor Hassan, in the opening, including energy costs. Those are another issue that many people say are a drag on the economy. That's been a big issue here in the Granite State, where to find the energy that we're going to need to keep the state moving forward. A lot more conversation with New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan in just a moment, and more questions from our live audience. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. Welcome back to our series of Rudman Center Conversations with the Candidates at UNH School of Law. Our candidate is New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan. And Governor Hassan, let's talk about energy. This is said to be a big drag on our economy. You mentioned it as one of the things that keeps you up at night. High energy costs in this state. What's the best approach to lowering those costs, Governor Hassan? I know that's a big question, and I'll have a couple follow-ups for you, but just the big answer first, please.
Well, we just released a comprehensive 10-year energy strategy plan because it's one of the things that had been lacking. Certainly, we know that for our businesses to compete and thrive here, they need to have a supply of energy, and we need to be able to bring the cost of that energy down. And that's obviously important for residential customers as well. So the energy strategy makes a number of proposals for areas that we need to focus on moving forward. What I'm focused on in particular right now is, first and foremost, looking at the entire energy picture. We can continue to work on energy conservation and efficiency. That's one way. Using less energy helps reduce costs. But we also need to look at diversifying our fuel sources. We need to look at bringing in additional capacity to bring in natural gas, which is an important bridge fuel. So those are some of the things we're going to need to do. And we need to do this all in the context of honoring New Hampshire's own requirements in terms of how you site energy projects and protecting our natural resources. We also need to focus on this in a regional way. This is a regional issue. The Northeast in particular is kind of at the end of the natural gas pipeline. So while we're seeing energy costs go down because of access to natural gas in the rest of the country, it's a real concern here in New England. And that's one of the reasons that I joined with my fellow New England governors to really look at how we can have a regional approach. I'm also pretty pleased that recently there seems to be some private market interest in perhaps expanding that natural gas line capacity. But again, it's really important that we do that in a way that respects New Hampshire's siting requirements and protects our natural resources.
Well, let's talk about the pipeline for a moment, and then I do want to talk about some of the other alternative energies. As you said, the governors of New England have gotten together and said, hey, New England, we need more natural gas pipeline to get the natural gas into our region. We had some scary price hikes last winter. The governors also suggested that ratepayers be asked to pay for the development of a new natural gas pipeline. But then the private sector now seems to be stepping in, so maybe ratepayers don't need to do it. What do you think?
Well, that's one of the reasons I'm so encouraged about the private market stepping in. And again, I think these are all discussions that we all of the governors would need to come together on. What I've really focused on is making sure that we understand what New Hampshire's interests are here. I certainly don't want to participate in a project that wouldn't help lower costs here in New Hampshire or give us some purchase power agreements, for instance. So we'll keep working together with the other New England governors, but I am encouraged by the private sector interest.
It's so tricky, too, Governor Hassan. I'm sure you know this, that you know everybody says, yes, more natural gas would be great for the region, but then when it comes to the idea of putting the pipeline in somebody's backyard, nobody wants that pipeline. People are afraid of leaks and worse, safety concerns. The town of Hollis, as you know, has had a big vote on this. They don't want a natural gas pipeline. And there have been other opposition as well. So how do you get around that as the governor to say, hey, folks, sorry it's in your backyard, but we need it?
Well, of course, it's really important for people in New Hampshire to speak up when they have concerns like this. I was just up in Randolph about 2 weeks ago, where we celebrated the passage of a couple of bills in this last year that really will help New Hampshire have a voice in the maintenance of the condition of pipelines that come through our state. We have pipelines already, obviously, that carry a number of products in our state. And so we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can, that the state can now inspect pipelines themselves. So one, we want to address safety, and we want to make sure that we have plans should there be any kind of leakage or spill from pipelines. Secondly, in terms of siting, I think the people in Hollis raised some important concerns about where in particular in Hollis that proposed pipeline would go. They've also come up with a proposal, an alternative proposal, of where pipeline might go in that part of the state. And I think that that's a very constructive kind of dialogue. We are very good in New Hampshire at coming together, working out problems, working out our challenges. We're going to have them. There's no perfect answer to any of this, but I'm absolutely confident that if we keep sharing ideas and come up with a constructive approach to how we can cite energy projects, among other things, that we'll do just fine.
So let's talk about the energy project where it's been very difficult to come together. And you know what I'm going to say, Governor Hassan. The Northern Pass project, lots of strong opposition to this Canadian hydropower project. Given the impact of the transmission towers and the lines and the landscape, you and many others have suggested burying the lines to make it more attractive. But the companies involved say that's really going to make it a lot more expensive. So as we talk about high energy costs, would burying the lines make this even affordable?
Well, first of all, I think when we're talking about any kind of project that has the potential for, you know, large infrastructure, we need to be very, very sensitive to our natural resources, our natural treasures. First and foremost, they really define who we are as a place and a people. You know, if you drive up to the North Country and you really spend a little bit of time there, if you hike in the White Mountains, as I did last summer, to get a sense of where some of the towers in the Northern Pass Project might go, you have a very strong understanding of how important these beautiful natural treasures are to us and our culture and our identity as a people. And I think it's really important always to keep that in mind. It's also really important to understand that tourism is our second largest industry in New Hampshire. And so we certainly don't want to trade one set of jobs for another. We don't want infrastructure to be in a place that would really dampen tourist interest. So as we go through this process, what I've said about Northern Pass is that the first proposal that the company made, I thought, was an unacceptable proposal. I do think it's really important that they look at burying more lines. And that's
even
the kind
if it would raise the cost.
Well, I think what we should be looking at is ways to innovate in the transmission process. You know, lots of other industries are innovating it very, very rapidly. And we have you know, I have confidence that in the energy sector and in the transmission sector, there can be innovation too. And I think that that's one of the things we really should be looking at.
Two more questions on energy, and then we have so many other subjects to go through. Here's a comment from our audience. In light of Sunday's climate change mark in New York City and the UN Climate Summit this week, what strategies will you pursue to help New Hampshire take significant, underlined, steps to remove carbon emissions? Thank you for the question.
Well, and that's one of the things that our energy strategy and our 10-year energy plan is really intended to not only address, but to continue the discussion with. I hope that people throughout New Hampshire, we had a very robust public process to build that energy plan. And so we want to move forward with additional measures for energy efficiency, for diversifying energy sources. It's very important to reduce our emissions. It's also one of the reasons that I joined other Northeast governors last year in asking the EPA to begin to hold our upwind states accountable for some of what they passed down to us here. And I was very pleased that the EPA's ability to help us do that was supported.
Speaking of reducing our emissions, I-93 widening is coming, and some people say that's only going to increase the emissions. You're inviting more cars, you build it, and they will come, and they will all be in cars. There's no train, and that will only increase emissions. And there is still some sentiment that, gee, you know, it's only going to get more crowded. Why didn't you just put a train down the middle of that road and reduce emissions in a big way?
Well, I'm really pleased that we came together in kind of the New Hampshire tradition of bipartisan problem solving and passed the most significant investment in transportation infrastructure in about 23 years in the last session.
That was the 4.2% gas tax increase.
And I think what's really important about that is we're seeing roads and bridges that were crumbling before are being fixed as we speak, and we're going to complete the expansion of I-93 because we can't have a 21st century economy without a modern and solid infrastructure. It's important for our businesses to get their goods to market. It's important for our commuters. It's important for our tourists. But there are certainly other things we can do with transportation infrastructure, one of them being rail. And I'm looking forward to getting the results of the rail study. You'll remember that despite a lot of support for the idea of rail into southern New Hampshire, the study was defunded or the funding was denied a couple of years
ago. And then it went on privately,
We restored, in the last 2 years, the Executive Council and I supported accepting the money to study rail, and that study will be reported on soon. And then I think we'll be able to have a very important conversation in New Hampshire about how we could, if it turns out to be cost-effective and has the environmental benefits that so many people suggest that it will, and I think it will, then we should be able to have that discussion about how we could, if we decide we want to have rail, bring it into New Hampshire.
One more energy question. Governor Lynch signed on to a pledge that New Hampshire must get 20% of its energy supply from renewable sources by the year 2020. Just 5 years away, so far, from what I understand, Governor Hassan, we're not on target to make that goal. Are we going to make it?
Well, that's one of the things that we're really looking at with this energy strategy is how we can improve on that. We are making some progress, but I think we need to come together and take another look at whether we're doing everything we possibly can to get to that goal.
Here's another question on a completely different subject. This has to do with your support for casino gambling here in the Granite State. This person asks, Massachusetts will have a huge casino in Everett, 25 miles from Salem, New Hampshire. What do you see as the future of a proposed casino in southern New Hampshire? And this is from Jack, who's in our audience tonight. Thank you, Jack.
Well, thank you, Jack, for the question. I continue to think that having one destination casino that would require very significant investment in the casino makes sense for New Hampshire. It's a way to take revenue that our people otherwise will spend in other states, as they do now in Connecticut and Maine, and keep it here so that we can invest in the priorities that help us build a 21st century economy. And so I continue to think it makes sense. I'm very pleased with the work that the New Hampshire House did to create a regulatory system should a casino be authorized, so that we are very comfortable before we do it in the kind of regulatory system we would have in place. What I hear from the experts who look at the casino industry nationwide is that there is still room in New England for another casino, and that southern New Hampshire remains a very good location for one, even with what's going on in Massachusetts. But obviously, that's part of the discussion that we'd have as we move forward. I continue to think that it doesn't make sense to have New Hampshire citizens spending money at casinos in other states, allowing other states to use that revenue to build their roads and bridges or their schools. I'd like to have that revenue. Again, it's about the priorities that we all want to invest in together so that we can have a 21st century economy, we can attract innovative businesses here and create great jobs.
Well, speaking of New England and the picture, as you know, Governor Hassan, the three they're planning for in Massachusetts. Maine has two casinos right now, including one an easy drive from Conway, New Hampshire, and is looking at possibly building more. Does this change the picture at all for you, Governor Hassan?
What may happen in Maine? I hear from business owners up in Conway, for instance, is that they see cars going over the border, and they know that that people are going to dinner in Maine so that they can go to the casino in Maine. And they argue that it makes sense to have a casino here so that we could capture some of those revenues here, because there is a strong population of people who want to go to casinos. It's also a method of raising revenue in New Hampshire that a strong majority of New Hampshire citizens support. And I think it makes sense, again, to look at how we might do it in New Hampshire, understanding what the market is, but understanding that those who studied the markets say that there's still room for a casino in New Hampshire. I think it would be good to be able to have those revenues to invest in the priorities that we all care about.
And I'm sure you've seen the headlines from Atlantic City, casinos closing down. In Delaware, they're struggling. Other northeastern states, Fitch Ratings said the northeastern market was getting saturated. So there's some concern on the other side that we've already got too much of this, and that one more casino is not going to gain what we hope it might gain, or what you hope it might gain.
Well, all industries see competition, and all industries have some successes and some failures. And so one of the things you have to do if you're going to go forward with this, and this is part of the discussion we'd have as a state, is you have to look at what the market is. But there are a number of casinos that have not done well or declined because they've seen more competition. More and more states are doing this. We're seeing more and more states get revenues that they're using to fund their schools. They're using perhaps to freeze or lower tuition. We've talked a lot about the things we need to invest in to grow a 21st century economy. And the question for us becomes, are we going to do this in a way that a strong majority of citizens in New Hampshire support, using revenue that is already spent on casinos in other states? If we're not going to do that, that presents us a particular challenge. So I just think it makes sense to capture those revenues here and invest in the priorities. I think we will, of course, examine the condition of the industry and the saturation of the market. But the most up-to-date reports we have indicates that there's still room for a casino in New Hampshire.
Now, you've talked about building a high-end, highly regulated casino. From what I understand, Governor Hassan, Massachusetts is looking at building something much bigger than what New Hampshire at least had looked at building. The latest proposal in Massachusetts is for a $1.6 billion gambling resort in Everett, which our listener mentioned, compared with the proposal on the table last year, $600 million casino complex in Salem. So would our casino be not big enough to really matter in the broader New England scheme of things?
Well, when you think about what we want to accomplish over the next several years, we want to expand middle-class opportunity. We want to make sure that innovative businesses create jobs. We want to keep our economy moving in the right direction. We've talked about a number of things we need to do to support our young people in higher education, to support our K-12 system, to strengthen our infrastructure, to perhaps bring rail into New Hampshire. These are all things that we know will strengthen our economy and move us forward. A high-end destination casino may be a way to help us achieve the revenues that will allow us to invest in those priorities. And I think we will study and consider very carefully the testimony and expertise we get about what changes in the market might mean. But again, the most recent indications, we've known Massachusetts was going to move forward with at least two or three casinos for a while. And the experts, as they do their analysis, indicate that there is still a market for a high-end casino in New Hampshire, just as there is, a variety of different venues in any number of industries and entertainment throughout our region.
Well, my next question, I think you've already answered it. If reelected, how much of a priority is this going to be for you, Governor Hassan, getting this casino in place?
Well, my priorities are really expanding middle-class opportunity, helping attract great businesses to New Hampshire, helping entrepreneurs thrive here with our Live Free and Start initiative. Those are all of the, investing not only in a strong workforce, but helping build on the competition in our healthcare markets, helping lower energy costs. We all know that we have a number of steps we want to take to build this 21st century economy. So as I focus on that, if a casino can help us bring revenues to that effort, it's certainly something that I will advocate for.
If a casino is rejected again, which it was this year, it was close, what else might be a source of money that you would look at, Governor Hassan, to fund a lot of the priorities that you've talked about, that you care about?
Well, what we did in the last budget was we came together, we looked at what our priorities were, we put together a bipartisan revenue estimating panel that established pretty conservative revenue estimates by all reports, and we came together around those revenues and we balanced our budget. We did it without an income or sales tax, and that's what we're going to continue to do.
All right. Well, coming up, I've got another question from our audience talking about marijuana legalization. Also, someone wants to know about the mental health settlement that the state signed on to this year. So we'll tackle those when we come up. More conversation with New Hampshire Governor Hassan in just a moment. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. Welcome back to our campaign series of Rudman Center Conversations with the Candidates at UNH School of Law. Our candidate is New Hampshire Governor Maggie Hassan, a Democrat running for re-election. And Governor Hassan, let's talk about marijuana legalization, which has been talked a lot about in Colorado and Washington State, medical marijuana here in the Granite State. Here's a question from Facebook that came in earlier from Nick. He says, how can the governor oppose marijuana legalization on the grounds of suspected public harm while also promoting both the liquor industry and proposed casino gambling, both of which have been shown to have greater harmful social effects than cannabis? Nick, thanks for the comment from Facebook. And Governor Hassan, marijuana legalization. Nick says it's not as bad as alcohol and gambling.
Well, what we did in the last couple of years was focus on legalizing medical marijuana, which I think is the right and compassionate thing to do. I think healthcare professionals should be able to prescribe marijuana for certain conditions. And we are working towards getting our licensed dispensaries up and running. There was a time frame set out in the legislation that passed, and our Department of Health and Human Services is working on that. I do have concerns about legalizing marijuana, although I certainly also think that it's appropriate to look at our current criminal code and look at whether it could be revised or changed. I don't think people on a first offense for marijuana use should have their lives ruined. So I think reviewing our criminal code and looking at the penalties for marijuana use makes a great deal of sense. My concerns about legalizing marijuana fully, and the thing that differentiates it from some of the other things that Nick talked about, is first and foremost, it's still illegal under federal law. Secondly, we have a very, very challenging drug addiction and abuse problem in New Hampshire, and especially among our young people. One of the things that I'm really pleased we worked on and we were able to come to bipartisan agreement about is our New Hampshire Health Protection Plan, what your listeners might also know as Medicaid expansion. For the first time, that has Medicaid covering not only treatment for addiction but treatment for behavioral health issues. I think that's really, really important. But we know that addiction and drug abuse is a real problem, especially among our young people. We know from the science that we see now that marijuana use is particularly harmful to adolescents. And we know that marijuana is much more potent than it was 20 or 30 years ago. So I think it's really important that we be very, very cautious about legalizing a substance that can really do harm to our young people. And we also know that when a substance is legal, use among young people tends to rise. So even if we legalize it just for people 21 years or older, for instance, we know that it is very, very likely that marijuana use will increase among our young people. And that really can do significant harm. So I think it's very important that we proceed with implementing our medical marijuana law. I think it's very, very important that we look at how we might change our criminal code to address especially first-time offenses differently. But I continue to have reservations about legalizing marijuana, and I think that some of what we're seeing in Colorado State and Washington State supports my caution.
So you said first-time use of marijuana shouldn't ruin your life now, to use your words. I mean, what happens now if you are caught with marijuana on a first-time offense?
Well, the penalties can be quite significant, and it can impact qualifying for student loans, and it can impact qualifying for the military. So I think it's very important to look at it, and it's something that I've suggested we bring a number of stakeholders together to review.
Because you don't want it to just be seen as a slap on the wrist and not taken seriously either.
I mean, what's most important here is that we consider that we have a lot of work to do as a public health and public safety challenge in New Hampshire on substance abuse. And that's something I'm very, very focused on and will continue to work on.
One more question on this, Governor Hassan. Speaking of medical marijuana, New Hampshire has joined the rest of New England in approving marijuana for medical purposes, but we have a pretty tight law, and as you know, advocates of this say New Hampshire is dragging its feet. They say 1 year out, the state doesn't even have rules for medical marijuana dispensaries, never mind the dispensaries themselves. What's taking so long?
Well, the statute that we passed anticipated that it would take a while to do. And so we are going with the timeline that was set out in the law, and we're continuing to work as hard as we can to implement it. I know people are very, very anxious for this to get implemented. I know that there are people who have conditions that can be relieved by medical marijuana, and they are anxious for this to get up and running. And we are working as hard as we can to do that responsibly. I was very pleased we were able to get consensus on a law and able to pass it into law and join the other New England states in supporting medical marijuana use. And that's something I continue to support and will be working to implement in accordance with the timeline that we set out in the law.
So are you on track with it? Because you listen to the advocates and they say we are way behind schedule on this.
I believe we are on track, but I'm always happy to get feedback from the advocates and listen to their concerns.
Here's another comment that came in from our audience. This is from Jay, who says, in July, you signed a bill implementing the state's class action settlement with residents who have mental illness. This marks great progress, but many improvements are still needed in services for those with mental illness. What do you plan to accomplish in this area in your next term? We should say if reelected. And Jay, thank you for that comment. And I've got a follow-up to that as well. So I'm glad Jay asked the question.
Well, I was really pleased that in our bipartisan budget, we were able to come together and reinvest in community-based mental health services. We all have friends and neighbors who struggle with mental illness. We all know that people with mental illness should be able to access treatment in the right place, at the right time, from the right provider. And one of the things we really did in our bipartisan budget was reinvest in community-based health services to also prevent the kind of situations that we see in our hospital emergency rooms where people in acute mental health crisis are waiting for treatment, sometimes for days. The mental health, the fact that we reinvested and we made mental health treatment at a community-based level a priority in our budget, then brought the parties to the table in that lawsuit. And I was very pleased that, again, in a bipartisan way, with strong support from legislators in both parties, we were able to approve and fund the mental health settlement. It not only allows us to make sure that we are settling this matter and creating a community-based mental health services, but that we're doing it in a New Hampshire way and that a federal judge isn't telling us how to do it. So I'm very pleased with that. That settlement, along with the investments we made in our budget, will increase our capacity for community-based mental health services. It does take time to stand these things up. Once you fund them, you do have to stand them up, and we are working diligently to do that because we know that we have friends and neighbors who are struggling with illness. The other thing that is a really important development here is when we passed the Medicaid expansion bill, when we came together on that bipartisan agreement, that means that for the first time, Medicaid, in this case, Medicaid provided through expansion, is paid for 100% by the federal government, is going to cover both mental illness, behavioral health services, but also substance abuse. And they're often co-occur. And that's a really strong and important step as well to supporting the kind of community-based services that both the settlement and our bipartisan budget established.
How much is the settlement going to cost the state, Governor Hassan?
I don't have an exact figure with me, but we are working as hard as we can to coordinate it with the budget investments that we made. What we know is that it's going to be critical to have a variety of not only community-based treatment services, but also some crisis services, some crisis apartments, and that they need to be integrated throughout the full state. That's one of the things that the settlement really spoke to. You know, our core value as a democracy is that everybody counts. And our great progress as a state and as a country has been that every generation of Americans has brought more and more people in from the margins into the heart and soul of community and reinforced that basic principle that everybody in a democracy counts and everybody in a democracy has the opportunity to be at the decision-making table. And when we bring everybody in, not only is it good for the cause of human freedom and dignity, it's also really important for good decision-making. I'm very, very proud of the settlement we made. I'm very, very proud of the progress we are making to bring people into our communities. But we're going to have more work to do. We're going to need to work with healthcare providers so that all healthcare providers are trained to recognize symptoms of mental illness, are trained to treat it at different levels, just the way any kind of illness. Sometimes you're treated by your primary care physician. Sometimes you're referred to a specialist. But that's the kind of progress that I think our bipartisan budget and the settlement really represents.
And
I think it's a great
step
forward.
There. Sure, where you have enough people to take care of the newly insured and people covered by this mental health settlement. And in addition to the settlement, which will need to be paid for, and you're making the case that it's money well spent, the state may also have to shell out another $60 to $100 million from another settlement New Hampshire's hospitals. We won't go into the Medicaid enhancement tax because that would take us forever and it would be really boring for our audience. But that's a lot of money. In addition, so you've got the hospital settlement, you've got the mental health settlement. Has your administration, Governor Haslam, begun looking at potential sources of revenue or cuts to begin filling these budget holes?
Well, one of the things I'm really pleased we were able to do in the last 2 years was, in addition to the bipartisan budget without an income or sales tax, is that we settled three very expensive lawsuits that were threatening our state's financial outlook and that were threatening our state's bond rating. So instead of litigating, we are finally replacing a shamefully outdated women's prison. And instead of litigating, we brought together almost all of New Hampshire's hospitals, and we came up with a way to address this so-called Medicaid enhancement tax issue. But it's really a way to address how we pay for care for the uninsured in New Hampshire and how we make sure that we have a healthcare system that works throughout the state for everybody. And then instead of litigating, we're actually supporting people with mental illness and helping them find treatment. And over time, bringing down the kind of costs that are associated not only with untreated mental illness, but with substance abuse that sometimes co-occurs with that, and with incarceration that it can occur because people don't get treatment
when they get in trouble.
So I think, you know, again, as part of being fiscally responsible, you have to look at what things are threatening the long-term financial health of your state, and certainly those lawsuits were doing it, and certainly our settlements are a way of containing that expense. We will need to come together and focus on how we address all of the priorities in our budget. But it would have been far more expensive to leave those lawsuits out there.
Sure. Well, that may be a conversation for another day, because that is a big chunk of change, and there's never a lot of change rattling around at the State House, as you know. Here's another question from our audience, and there are some terrific questions here. Do you have any plans or ideas to help end or decrease the amount of homelessness in the state? If so, what are your plans or ideas?
Well, certainly we are all concerned about our fellow Granite Staters who are homeless. And we've seen some really great examples of how we can decrease homelessness in different parts of our state. I'd start by going back a little bit to community-based mental health services. We know that some of our homeless population are people who suffer from mental illness and haven't been able to get treatment. And again, access to treatment should help in this regard. We also know that affordable housing is a considerable challenge in New Hampshire, and it's also one of the workforce issues that I think we need to continue to come together and work on. It's something I hear about from businesses. They want to attract a workforce, and then they realize that perhaps wherever their business is, there isn't that much affordable housing. And we know how much stronger communities get when people who work in businesses in those communities can also live in those communities. But we're also seeing some great pilots in places like Nashua at Harbor Homes, where we're focused on helping people get the kind of supports they need, so that and doing it while we're supporting them in apartments where they have supports for whatever challenges they have. There used to be an approach to housing people that said, if you don't have an addiction problem and if you stay out of trouble in any sorts of ways, or if you get the medical treatment you need, then you can have an apartment. What we're seeing is a lot of progress where if we can get people in an apartment, then they're in a stable living situation, and then they can begin to attend to those other challenges they have.
The housing first model.
Right, the housing first model. And I think there's some really great promise there.
Well, here's another question from our audience. This past year, a bill to add sexual orientation to the anti-discrimination clause of the Constitution failed in the House because it didn't include protections for transgender individuals. If such a bill passes this term, would you support it?
I think it's really important that each and every Granite Stater is afforded the full rights of being a citizen of the Granite State, and I would support, obviously you have to look at the language of any legislation or constitutional amendment, but I think it's really, really important that all Granite Staters know that they can pursue employment, they can engage in our civic life, they can enjoy New Hampshire's high quality of life, no matter what their sexual orientation is.
So it sounds like, without giving an absolute yes, you're saying probably yes, but you'd have to look at the language.
Think how much stronger we've gotten as a state since we passed marriage equality and we said people in New Hampshire can marry whoever they love. Again, it's about bringing people in from the margins. It strengthens all of us in addition to being just important for the cause of human dignity and freedom.
Well, I want to close out, Governor Hassan, by asking about your own political future. There's already been some buzz about you considering a run against U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte in 2016, especially since your husband stepped down from his big job as head of Phillips Exeter Academy to both care for your son and also, he said, to support your political career. What should we read into that?
Oh, my goodness. I love being governor of New Hampshire. This is the best job in the world. I get the opportunity to travel around a state where people are solving problems in their daily lives all the time, whether it's in their business or their community or their family. My job as governor of New Hampshire is to follow the example of the people of New Hampshire, and I enjoy it immensely. And I think we make a real difference here at the state level because we are demonstrating in New Hampshire that democracy really works at a time when I think people are really looking at Washington, D.C. and seeing the gridlock and thinking maybe this democracy thing has run its course. I know every day as governor of New Hampshire, that democracy is alive and well, that it operates really well in addressing very difficult challenges. And I love this job, and I will work every day between now and Election Day to earn the support of the people of New Hampshire.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have. And I want to let everyone know that our next forum is with New Hampshire U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen. You can go to nhpr.org for more information, including a complete forum schedule. We will be talking to all the candidates for major office here in the Granite State. So check it out, nhpr.org. While you're there, look at NHPR's ongoing coverage of Election 2014. I want to thank everyone for coming out tonight, especially thank the team at NHPR and UNH Law. And to you, Governor Hassan, for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.